away on a journey. You're going home now. The wheels clatter and the dining car rocks and sways. You forget about your cup of coffee. You stare out the window. You're almost home now. The hills, the sloping hills and ridges, the soft little valleys between, they seem to move like waves outside the window, moving, waving, welcoming you home. Ah, this is your countryside. You forget the dry, pinched, bitter smell of the train, the soot on the windows of the dining car. You can almost catch the scent of the pines. You can almost taste the tender birch trees, washed white and clean by the rain. You remember you've been away too long. And you wonder why it is. Going away, the best part is always coming back home. You press against the window with a napkin under your sleeve on the dirty sill, straining to catch the first glimpse of your town. It'll be there soon, around the next bend, your town. Around the bend and down the long grade. You'll see it soon in the valley. Watch for the river. The silver ribbon of the river winding through the valley between the hills. The river winding through your hometown, crisscrossed by bridges. Beautiful city of bridges and waterways. There she lies, nestled on the river. Oh, you're doggone right. The best part of traveling is always coming back home. When a man's got a home. A good home in this kind of country. That's the best part. When you hear the trainman coming through, calling through the dining car.
All clear. Next stop, all clear. All up for all clear.
When you hear the trainman calling, and he's calling your hometown.
The State Radio Council presents the documentary story of Eau Claire, Wisconsin, the fifth in a series of programs about Wisconsin communities, an actual record of life in the cities and crossroads of our state, prepared from tape recordings made on the spot to bring you the real sounds and voices of our neighbors at work and at play. Now with our narrator, Ray Stanley, we travel north by northwest, across the palm of Wisconsin, to the base of her little finger, where the knuckle crooks westward toward the Minnesota border. Here lies the town of Eau Claire in the Chippewa River Valley.
Eau Claire, all out for Eau Claire.
Chicago, Milwaukee, St. Paul and Pacific Railroad. The train pulls into the station on Barstow Street. Remember Barstow Street? Barstow's the main drag. Runs parallel to the river. Within a stone's throw of two rivers. And it's spring and flood tide. And the mighty Chippewa rolls through the town, washing the roots of trees on her banks. A little Eau Claire River joins her, rushing under the bridge at Barstow Street, where you see the big sign of the Northern States Power Company, its windows looking out over the river. Ah, so this is the main drag, Barstow Street. You stand on the river bridge, a block from the railroad station, and look into the heart of the town. Samuelson's department store, the Hotel Eau Claire. Tourist information at the Indian Head office. Walgreens drugstore, Meyer's music shop. You look back over your left shoulder up the Eau Claire River, and there stand the factories, the smokestacks of industry. And your eye travels on, above and beyond to the green hills of the valley, circling round, round this, your town, on the banks of the river. A song's running through your head, a song mixed of the river and rushing water, a song of pine trees and valleys and the men who came on the river shanties, driving the logs down the stream.
One evening last June as I rambled the green woods and valleys among, the mosquitoes' notes were melodious, and so was the quippoorwill's song. The frogs in the marshes were croaking, the treetops were whistling for fish, the partridges round me were drumming on the banks of the little Eau Claire.
A man from Eau Claire wrote that song, W.N. Allen, a song of your hometown. You stand on Barstow Street on the river bridge with the tune of the song running through your head. And you remember what they say, the folks who live in the town, folks who've been here through the years, back to 1922, back to boyhood days, back as far as the turn of the century. Ask some of them about the town and the river. Ask how it used to be.
When you go downtown to Barster Street and recall the buildings that were there in 1922, you will find now quite a change. I have had people tell me who have come back from a long absence that they hardly know the place.
The river was here a long time before I ever got here, or before my folks who emigrated from Norway came to this community, but
The real lumber area really ended in 1901 when the Daniel Shaw Lumber Company sent its last raft of logs down the Chippewa River.
The voices push back through the years to the days of sawdust, remembering the town growing up around lumber mills. Men that walked on the riverfront back in those days, the men in mackinaws and boots, the rivermen, the raftsmen, the lumberjacks and the shanty boys.
He wore a red sash round his middle, with an end hanging down at each side. His shoes number 10 were a foul high, with heels of a 4 inches wide. His name it was Honest John Murphy. His face was not troubled with fear, and he was as jolly a raftsman as was there on the little old fair.
Big, boisterous men, gone now. Gone with the big pines. Vanished like the curl of smoke rising from the cook shack in the forest. But the town remembers. Go down Barstow Street, past the jewelry stores, the labor union headquarters, the parking lot by the river. Cross over the bridge on Water Street, where it spans the bend of the Chippewa. Old Water Street, past where the sawmills once stood. Take the scenic drive to Carson Park. Almost an island, it lies ringed about by Half Moon Lake. And in the heart of it is a logging camp. Bunkhouse, barn, cookhouse, and smithy. A camp and all its equipment, set up there by a town that remembers and will not willingly forget. There is no fire in the smithy's forge. The bunks are empty. The log sled stands idle in the barn. Birds are singing in Carson Park in the spring of 1950, and automobiles can drive up to the Paul Bunyan camp door. But out of the doorway of the cookhouse comes a man. One of the vanished men, one who came back. He stands in his plaid jacket, gnarled hands empty. His mustache gray, but his eyes as sharp and blue as the cold blue waters of Half Moon Lake. His name is Olaf Bergeson, and his was a young life spent in the lumberjack's woods.
More than 20 years. I just didn't know what to do with myself. One time when I went up in the woods, had a job cooking, and kind of liked it, and I learned to cook, and I followed it up for 20 years afterwards.
Big, boisterous men in mackinaws and boots. Hungry men. Ole can tell you what he cooked for their breakfast at 5 o'clock in the morning at 30 below.
Well, we have beefsteak, fried potatoes, pancakes, a couple kinds of cookies, cake, mostly only two kinds of bread, coffee.
In the cookhouse, through the doorway behind Ole, you see the table and benches, the tin plates laid out for the meal. Ask him about washing up the dishes afterwards.
Dishpans we had there, our judge hold about 15 gallons. Knives and forks, and spoons. Put a lot of hot water and soap in them, and then shake the dickens out of them, drain them off good, and rinse them out again with hot water, put them in the green sacks, one cookie on each end of it, and shake it quite a bit, and they'd be nice and dry.
Long winter nights with the fiddles playing in the bunkhouse, and then sleep while the wind whistled outside and piled up the snow in the skidways. But then would come spring and river ice melting. The spring drive, men driving the log rafts down the Chippewa to Eau Claire. Ole and his cook stove went along in a riverboat.
Well, that's Wanigan. We tie up about at noon, just a little ahead of the crew. Feed them either first lunch or second lunch, as it happened to be. And supper time, tie up for the night. There'd be two Wanigans, a blackened Wanigan and a cook Wanigan. The Warnigan men put up the tents for the men to sleep in, scatter a few straws of hay around there, and let them sleep on that, in the blanket.
This spring, this month of May 1950, there's no log jam on the river, no mill pond above Eau Claire. You can't hear the saws scream as they bite into the lumber. The sawdust days are gone in the town. Ask Ole if he thinks those days were better.
I do. Yeah. Why? I don't know. Things were cheaper then. You worked harder, you worked longer hours, but still at the same time, I don't know. The dollar then went further than 40 does now. If you're going to start logging here like I did 50 years ago around here, well, I don't think you'd get a man that understood no cattle from a peavey. And the blacksmith, that's a thing of the past now.
Yes, they're things of the past now. The blacksmiths, the ox teams, the canned hooks, and the peavies. Nolly Bergeson's a man who came back, one of the vanished men out of the forests. And he finds no familiar thing to set his hand to in the town, save the empty pots and pans in the silent logging camp in Carson Park. But other men have gone out from Eau Claire, gone farther away than the North Woods, to a different kind of camp, far from ice and snow.
I put 37 months and a half overseas. First of all, I went to New Zealand. We was there for about a week. And then from there, we went to New Caledonia making arrangements to go to Guadalcanal. We was there, Guadalcanal, I guess I would say, 8 months of action. Then we had about 2 months rest. And then from there, we went back to New Zealand for another rest period. And then from there we went to New Guinea. I couldn't say how long, but until that was cleared up. And then from there we went to Aishima. Was there for about 3 weeks. And then from there we went to Okinawa until the war was over.
Yes, many young men traveled far, and of the many were some who came back. You wonder what it is to come back from that journey, to find again your hometown waiting for you in the valley. If it's winter, if there's a new snowfall on the river, do you scoop up a handful of the cold crystals, make a snowball of it, throw it, smash it against the pillars of the bridge to smash out of your mind the memory of jungles on Guadalcanal? But a man doesn't talk about these things now. He talks of the present and of his daily bread, of his wife and three children. His name is George Richards, heavy-boned man of 31, big muscular arms and a clean blue work shirt. Heavy hands, heavy eyebrows with a deep furrow between his eyes. And as he speaks, there's a roar of the machine shop behind him. For George Richards, coming home meant coming back to look for a job. You can't have a home, or a hometown either, unless you have a job. And to get ready for the job, George is studying at the Eau Claire Vocational School. It's tough, going to school on the GI Bill of Rights with only $120 a month to support your family. But the vocational school is training George for the job he wants.
And now I'm building a joiner, 6-inch joiner.
Mm-hmm. And how much longer before your normal course of work is done?
Well, I guess our course here is 22 months in the machine shop, unless we take up an apprenticeship.
And what do you hope to do once your course is finished?
I'll still stay at a machinist, I guess, in the machine shop. Time goes faster and it's very interesting.
Down the school corridor from the machine shop is the electrical department. And you spot Keith Gullickson there. Tall, rangy young man with an easy grin, wearing a crew haircut and a pair of army khakis. Keith's a farm boy, lived in the Eau Claire region all his life. He's married, with a couple of kids of his own. You watch him tinkering with the innards of a radio, and you know this training at the vocational school is going to help him set up an electrical repair shop of his own. Ask him why he came back. Ask Keith Gullickson how it was coming home, how things looked to him after the Army.
Claire's grown up a lot since I left it and come back again. So I think it's going to be growing a lot more, and I want to get in there and start growing with it if I can.
And you wonder what the chances are. Will Keith and George get jobs? Does the hometown need them? You ask their teacher, Frank Whitbrode, instructor in the vocational school electrical department.
Well, we have a very fair placement situation. We have 16 apprentices in the city of Eau Claire, and most of them started from their training program right here. We also have placements in Superior, in Duluth, in Rochester, Minnesota, also in La Crosse, Iowa, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and Milwaukee, and also in Green Bay. George Delkey and Anderson Electric, Herbert Smool, they're all journeymen. Jack Nardi, by the way, they had his picture in the paper.
And the waiting list grows. A waiting list of men who want a chance to learn. To learn a trade, to get a job. A job that needs doing in your hometown. You ask Frank Whitbread about that waiting list. All the GI veterans who want to get in. You don't screen those guys out, do you? You go easy on them, maybe?
This is not a soldier's home. This is a training institution. None of these boys, from my experience, are the type of fellows who want a dole system. They want to be able to know how to make their money and how to spend it. They don't want it free, and they are willing to work for it.
Remember the voice saying that people hardly know the place anymore? Well, that voice belongs to W.L. Engie, director of the vocational school. Came to Eau Claire as an ex-school teacher, turned auto mechanic in the Roaring Twenties. Began to teach other mechanics in 1932. Helped the vocational school grow out of house and home until it took over an old trunk factory in 1940. Now he's director of the school and a man who knows his job, can put his finger on just what vocational education means.
Well, vocational education can perhaps be summed up very briefly. 5 words would probably do it. It's to make an employable citizen. Vocational training in the Eau Claire Vocational School is divided into 5 different categories. Trade and industrial, commercial or business training, training in distributive occupations, homemaking, and we also have a department in agriculture.
You think of the kids in the Chippewa Valley, in the whole Northwest, 13 counties around Eau Claire. You know there's a lot of them, the kids 16 to 60 who haven't gone on from high school to colleges of higher learning. Here's their chance, the school for them, and they come flocking from miles around. You like the idea. They're coming to your hometown. And the vocational school, in turn, joins in civic affairs.
While the vocational school does not have the facilities in the way of auditorium or anything like that, yet we do participate in community affairs. Here's one instance. The Eau Claire Mail Corps, which has made quite a name for itself in this area, is one of the activities that we co-sponsor with the City Recreational Department.
Let's hear the male chorus, 75 men of Eau Claire, busy working men who like to get together evenings to sing a song. The director of the chorus is Caldwell Johnson. The song is Cindy. Get along home, Cindy. Cindy, get along home. You cross over from the west bank of the Chippewa River. It's nighttime, a spring night on Barstow Street, and soon the workers on the swing shift will get along home. Lights are blazing up on the Eau Claire River. You cut off Barstow Street into Grand Avenue, past City Hall, down the hill on Dewey Street, to cross the Dewey Street Bridge. Lights on the bridge twinkle in the water. The night air is sweet. That sweet valley air you dreamed of on the train coming home. But now along the riverbank you can't see the hills, only a monstrous shape of bricks and steel silhouetted against the sky. You turn toward it up Galloway Street.
The sales were $517 million plus for products that were made in 45 different plants. The United States Rubber Company have 45 plants located in the various parts of the United States. The total employees on the payroll of the United States Rubber Company in all of these plants is 56,000 plus.
That is the voice of big business. Big business on a nationwide scale. World-famous big business, the U.S. Rubber Company. A chunk of this big business thrives in your hometown. Sprawls along the north bank of the Little Eau Claire. Two city blocks and more of brick and steel, four stories high, guarded by five big gates. You look up at the smokestacks, spearing the sky, and there in the spring night, you can't help grinning. Big business? Well, shucks, it's strictly homegrown. Hometown factory that made good, got into the big time, and the hometown folks are plenty proud of it. Take Howard Hutchins, the factory manager, that voice of big business you heard just now. Howard Hutchins is no outsider. He's been here since 1917, not long after a local businessman got the idea of making tires. Gillette Rubber Company, they called it back in those days. And Howard Hutchins can tell you how it happened to settle on Eau Claire as the place to build its plant.
The Gillette Rubber Company, located in Eau Claire, for the reason that there was an ample supply of low-cost power at that time. There also was ample water supply, which is important in tire manufacture, and an abundant supply of good people to perform the operations of building the tires.
The river water and power and the people of the River Valley. Good reasons for a factory here. In 1930, it joined the family of U.S. rubber plants. But big business didn't change the home folks or their jobs in the tire factory. Early in the war, they switched their skills to making ammunition and won the Army-Navy E Award. And then Eisenhower mapped his plans to cross the channel and invade Europe. Orders came from Washington to get tires rolling off the assembly lines again. Heavy-duty tires for trucks and machinery. Ask Howard Hutchins what it meant to reconvert the factory to making tires.
In the early part of 1944, we started reconstructing our tire plant so that we could get back into tire production. The plant was completely rebuilt, doubled in size, and we were able to take advantages of all of the latest and most modern tire-making equipment so that the final result was the world's most modern tire plant, which we have in Eau Claire today.
Let's talk to the home folks on the swing shift. Take Lewis Coyer, young fellow. His father worked for the company back in the 30s. He belongs to the union, CIO. Ask Lewis Coyer about the union, about labor's problems at the plant.
It isn't like a lot of places where they go on for a long time. We have any trouble at all, why it's taken care of immediately. And I think it's because most of the boys here, I'd say around 8 out of 10, are high school graduates.
Coyer was overseas during the war in England and France repairing airplane damage. Caldwell's a veteran too. Jack Caldwell works on the heavy service tires of the plant. Ask Jack Caldwell about an industrial town. Is this a good place to raise a family? Is it a healthy place for kids?
Oh, it's healthy, yes, there is. We don't have much smoke or anything like that to contend with.
Are you listening out there in Pittsburgh or Wilkes-Barre, you other industrial towns? A man doesn't like to brag. But ask Jack Caldwell what it's like to go home after the swing shift of the factory. Jack drives home just 3 miles from the plant and...
Well, I live out on Altoona Lake, and it's just east of Eau Claire here, about 3 miles. We have our own home out there, and we live right on the lake. Good fishing. And we have hunting close by, and we have a six-room home built right on the lake bank. And any day we want to go fishing when the season's open, we can go. We're only about 20 feet from the lake, the back ports. And we have our boat and motor. And I think it's a very nice place out there.
A very nice place. You can tell the world. Here's a neighbor of Caldwell's. Lives in the little town of Altoona. Rides the bus 3 miles to work, a pocket builder for U.S. tires.
It was during the war that I went to work. My husband was drafted, and I thought that I'd work during the war. And then my husband lost his life, so I kept on working.
You have any children?
Yes, I have a little girl.
How old is she?
My little girl is 8 years old.
So you've gone right on and made a home for her?
Well, I've tried awfully hard.
Where is that?
I live in Altoona right now. But I like living there because my little girl has a better place to play, and I feel more at home away from the big town. It's just feel more like home. I own my own home, and I really enjoy living in a smaller place.
She's an attractive young woman, Mary Ingebretson. She talks to you there on the swing shift, the machinery of the plant rumbling in the background. She wears a soft white blouse and a pair of slacks. She's doing a factory job for a reason, and she's happy to talk about her little girl.
Oh, she's a sweet little child. She's got blonde hair and cute little personality. She goes to Sunday school every Sunday. Goes to the school. She hasn't missed a day since she started kindergarten. She's in the second grade now.
We can't forget the war. The war cut deep into the life of the valley. Men who traveled far, slept under strange skies, and some who vanished like the puffs of smoke from the anti-aircraft guns. Francis Jacobson was a heavy artillery man, crossed the channel to the beaches of Normandy, stayed to see the job done. Jacobson was one who came back, wouldn't live in any other town. A man couldn't ask for a better place, better working conditions.
I guess everybody always comes home to their hometown. Working conditions are fine.
And after he's through on the swing shift, what's home for Francis Jacobson?
I own my own home, a home I've been building since 1947.
Tell us a little bit about it. What's it like?
Well, it's quite a large home, but I didn't care to have anything too small. My home is 45 foot long and 26 foot wide.
You have a family?
I have a family, three children. Oh, it's beautiful this time of the year.
Building his own home, doing the job himself with lots of elbow room for those three kids of his. And Jacobson's not different from a lot of folks in your town. There are no slums in the valley. About 80% of the people own their own homes. And day in, day out, in blue jeans on the assembly line or wearing a white shirt and sitting up in the front office, a man can live close to the lakes and rivers, find easy recreation around the corner from his job. Go back to Howard Hutchins, top U.S. rubber man and factory manager.
A couple of years ago, we were fortunate in being able to find a very desirable place on Lake Altoona. And there we move to this cottage for the summer and find it very convenient. We have about an acre and a half of land with 125 feet lake frontage, and it takes me just a little bit less time to get to this summer cottage than it from the factory than it does to my home in town.
Up in the morning, out on the job, work like the devil for my pay, but that lucky
that lucky old sun, you're hearing the Eau Claire male chorus again.
With my woman, toil for my kids, sweat till I'm wrinkled and gray, while that lucky
great thing, the Eau Claire Mail Chorus. Sing concerts with the townsfolks. Travel, too. And last Christmas, the whole country heard them, singing on a nationwide broadcast carried by 457 radio stations. Caldwell Johnson is their director, busy man around town. He also directs the Eau Claire Oratorio Society, 230 voices, famous for their annual Easter concert singing the Messiah in the city auditorium. Mr. Johnson's full-time job is at the State Teachers College. You find the campus near Putnam Park, where the Chippewa River rolls westward beyond the town. A college campus, tree-lined, grass-carpeted, a teacher's college and dormitories, with a playground for the town's youngsters who attend the model grade school there. Top-notch institution of learning. Its job? To turn out teachers for the rural, elementary, and high schools of Wisconsin.
Paris est la capitale de la France.
Où est situé Bordeaux?
Bordeaux est situé dans l'ouest de la France.
That's John Schneider, an Eau Claire boy, talking in French with his French instructor, Eldon McMullen. Someday, John's going to teach French to other kids in Wisconsin schools, and he's learning it the right way, learning to speak it and feel at home with it as if it were his mother tongue. You remember how it used to be when you went to school years ago? You learned French the hard way, and all you can remember now is, merci, oui, oui. Here at the college, it's different. Ask the instructor, Eldon McMullen.
We're rather interested now in our experimental course in French, where all of the instruction is oral, conversational. Mr. Snyder is one of the students in that class, where we have no written assignments. In fact, we meet for double the length of an ordinary class, so that we try to get all the work done in class. We feel that they retain longer what they learn orally than by doing exercises.
But the big news this month is the debating team away from home. A very great honor, first of its kind. An invitation to the State Teachers College to send its debaters to the national tourney at West Point, New York. Here's Cleet Howard and Dick Donaldson, both debating students from the Eau Claire region.
On the basis of the records attained at these tournaments, Eau Claire State has been invited to attend a national debate tournament at West Point in New York.
Well, there'll be 32 teams out there at West Point, including the University of Alabama, last year's defending champion from last year, and the West Point Military Academy team. So we'll really have a tournament there. It will last 3 days, and the champion, of course, will be given a big trophy and will be invited to the tournament next year.
You want to hear the State Teachers College Band, the concert band, 52 members strong under the baton of Robert A. Gentner, the college director of instrumental music. The band's members wear blue and gold uniforms, and their season includes concerts within a 60 to 70 mile area. Here they are in the March of the Steel Men.
Yes, under the direction of our president, W.R. Davies, the Chippewa Valley Forum was inaugurated in 1942. It has had a continuous program since that time, and all of its sessions are held here in the college auditorium, where outstanding thinkers and speakers from all over the world have appeared.
You're listening now to Dr. Leonard Haas, Dean of Instruction at the college and distinguished leader in civic affairs.
In the matter of community service, we have borrowed the traditional Wisconsin idea. We aim to make this college a service center for the area which it serves.
1 year ago, the town of Eau Claire voted to adopt the city manager plan of government and elected a seven-man council to serve for a nominal $200 a year. Dean Haas is a member of that council, a symbol of the great contribution the State Teachers College makes to the town.
I believe that the city manager form of government in its first year has gained the confidence of the electorate of this community, as was given evidence by the fact that the three men who were up for re-election were re-elected here early in April. More efficient business management of the affairs of the city and the inauguration of a long-range program of community planning have been uppermost in the minds of the present city council. It has given us an opportunity to get a true cross-section of community leadership actively interested in community in the city affairs by membership on the council.
Who are some of the members of the council?
Herman White, who is president of the council, is president of the White Machine Works here in Eau Claire. Mr. Van Gordon, who is a local manufacturer of boats and miscellaneous products, is also a member. Mr. W.D. McIntyre, who is the local State Teachers College Board of Regent member, and who is a local manufacturer of bread and bakery products, is serving, beginning his second term. James Vole represents the American Federation of Labor, since he is their business representative here in Eau Claire. Fred Stussy, a longtime figure in local politics and a former mayor of the city of Eau Claire, has been making a real contribution. Dennis Danielson, a local attorney, is also on the council.
That's the sound of divers splashing in the YMCA pool. One of the swimmers is Jack Quicklin, a pre-commerce student at the college, now attending a night class in life-saving with Alton Lewis as the instructor.
These boys are qualified for senior life-saving and life-saving duty on the beaches here in Wisconsin and throughout the Midwest, in fact, any place in the country after they finish this course.
One of the real services we feel that the Y offers to the entire community, not only to the citizens of Eau Claire, but to surrounding communities, any place where public bathing beaches, pools are located, in that adequate lifeguards are necessary to safeguard the lives of these youngsters who swim throughout the summer months. My guess is that fully 95% of all of the lifeguards serving in public bathing places within a radius of 75 miles of Eau Claire have been trained in the YMCA program.
Now you're in the office of the Y, listening to C.E. Guthrie, the YMCA General Secretary. The YMCA is growing, too.
One of the significant things is that we provide a meeting place for many groups in the community. Last year, we have a record of more than 700 different groups having regularly scheduled meetings in our building.
What kind of groups are represented there?
Well, today is just a typical day. Of course, they're not all this big, but it happened that this was a fairly large day. When I came down to the Y at 9 o'clock this morning, I heard a large group of women singing upstairs. And it was the women's chorus of the Eau Claire Women's Club, who have been meeting here regularly all through the winter months, every week at least, and sometimes oftener when they're preparing for a special concert. In addition to that, during the late morning hours and early afternoon hours, a large group of men and women in a garden club had their meeting here. Tonight, every room that we have available for meetings is being taken. The CIO Council is having a meeting. The Eau Claire Stamp Club. There's a large group of people who are interested in proving the literature that is available to our young people in the newsstands of the community. They call themselves the Citizens Committee on Good Literature. They're meeting here in our building. In addition to that, the Junior Chamber of Commerce have committee meetings, their board meetings, all that sort of thing. Many civic, religious, and patriotic groups, when they do not have any facilities of their own or meeting places, they look to the Y to provide that type of service.
And you move over to the office of the YMCA Athletic Director, Clayton Anderson. It's quite a place. Pictures line the walls, pictures of boys.
There must be close to 5,000 pictures in here of different individuals, several of them duplicated, of course, in different sports, but they are all present members or past members.
You remember how it is for a boy. You remember being a kid in short pants, hanging around the baseball park, watching the Eau Claire Bears play. You sucked on a pink ice cream cone from Ecky's Dairy. And you wanted more than anything on earth to be a ball player. Play on a real team, be friends with the other fellas. You wanted it so hard the bottoms of your feet ached. That's what it's like for a boy. Athletics are important. And you remember other things have forgotten long ago. You remember your first day at school, the big kid that grabbed your cap and wouldn't give it back and threw it in a puddle in the street. But you can't remember back far enough. Memories of childhood are lost in a blur of sunshine and rain, mother and father, candles on the birthday cake and a rag toy. And there's something more, something beyond the limits of home and family life, bigger even than yourself and the playthings of your world. It grows with a child, flowing throughout his life, like the flow of the great river from the spring which gives it life, flowing on to the infinite ocean at river's end. Standing in the Children's Chapel of the Grace Lutheran Church, a chapel for children, 4 and 5 years old. It's a miniature house of worship, rows of tiny pews and kneeling benches, a small altar with a medallion of the mother and child above. On the altar, a miniature figure of the Christ, his arms reaching down toward the inscription. The inscription reads, "Suffer the little children to come unto me." In the Children's Chapel, Reverend Quello explains the significance of this service in the Grace Lutheran Church.
There have been those who have questioned the value of a children's chapel, thinking that the adults probably should be favored ahead of the 4 and 5 year olds. But we have found it most advantageous to have the little children, the 4 and 5 year olds, become adjusted to the environment of the church through a chapel that is their size. They have become so reverent. The superintendents of the kindergarten department, Miss Viola Tillison and Mrs. Marvin Olson, have been very successful in instructing the children to be reverent in the house of God. This is God's house, is one of the first words that they learn.
And you wonder how it is when the child grows up. Do the grown-up folks of Eau Claire go to church?
I have never been in a city where the church has been as strong as it is in Eau Claire. I don't believe there is a single time during the week when traffic is as great a problem as on Sunday morning.
The church and the school. That's the child's world, and everybody cares about children. The folks of the River Valley care. You can see it in the Sam Davy School, the newest elementary grade school in Eau Claire, named for the late beloved superintendent of the city school system. On the outskirts of town, high on the hill near the highway to Chippewa Falls, this school serves over 400 youngsters who used to have to travel miles by bus before this neighborhood school was built. You visit the school library, see the beautifully designed huge curved windows of glass brick, walls in gay pastel colors, fluorescent lighting and streamlined blonde furniture. The school principal, John Walters, tells how the parents take part in school affairs.
I find that the parents in our PTA are very responsive and very active, as has been shown in the projects that they've attempted this year and the success of those projects.
What are some of those projects?
This past Tuesday we had an auction sale, and although our group wasn't so large, we did, the financial end was good. We took in approximately $195 and cleared about $160.
And what's that $160 going to be used for?
That $160 will be used for buying equipment for the school.
And you get a word with Homer DeLong, the new superintendent of the school system, a newcomer and happy to be in Eau Claire.
Well, I've been particularly impressed with the Eau Claire school system in the informality of the faculty itself, the friendliness that exists, and suspended cooperation that I've had since I've been in the city. It seems to me that over the past years that there has been some very fine feeling between faculty and administration to develop the spirit that there seems to exist in the school system.
It's a fine school system, kindergarten through high school, and all over Wisconsin, the high school is famous for its basketball team and its band. Town's mighty proud of the high school band. Everybody, teachers and mothers and fathers, they've helped the band to grow. Ask Bob Guthrie.
We have a band director, Donald I. Boyd, who has done a very outstanding job with these students for 23 years. Each year he produces a band out of green material that is really outstanding. The students' parents felt so loyal and so thrilled at his ability to do a good job with the children that they felt obligated to do something for him, and they formed the band parents organization. They sell hot dogs at football games and pop and do a lot of any way to make money, in other words. I was president of the organization for 2 years, and in the 2 years that I was president, we made $7,000 for the band.
What do you do with that money?
Oh, we bought new uniforms, for one thing, at a cost of $3,400, and took the students on a couple of trips, chartered three buses and took them to Minneapolis, and we took them to Duluth, played a couple of concerts, stayed at a good hotel with them, and we do that as a courtesy or to reward them for the extra effort that they had put forth in this band work.
And how do you feel about it? Is it as a parent with a daughter who's played in the band, is it worth all the effort?
Oh, my daughter played in the band for 4 years, and it's worth all the effort that I ever put into it. In fact, I regret that I don't have more children to go through Mr. Boyd's hands in that band, and I would still be in there working, I'll tell you.
Uh-huh. How do you feel when you see that band now, all dressed up in uniforms, marching out on the football field?
That band is very dear to my heart, and I really get a thrill out of it. When that high school band comes down the street, it's really something to see.
Everybody in town knows Bob Guthrie, lives on a farm nearby, and that girl of his who played in the high school band. Why, Mary is somebody you'd be proud to know, too. She's a lovely girl of 19 now, a sophomore in the teacher's college, and a champion 4-H club member. You find Mary in the barn by the calf pen.
Ever since I can remember, I've been around stock, and I didn't care much about dolls or anything. I'd rather go out and play with the calves in the barn. I had my first calf when I was 10 years old. And I groomed it all summer and then took it to the 4-H fair, which is held at Eau Claire every year. I took first prize. We were very thrilled when Mary took her first calf to the show because we had watched her work with it all summer, and naturally, we were just hoping that she would derive some benefit from it, which she did. We've always been interested in any activity that Mary belonged to. For instance, when she was a member of the Eau Claire High School Band, we were always very active in the band parents. When she joined 4-H, we backed her up in that 100%. Any activity that she was interested in, we were interested in. We always felt that that gave her more enthusiasm when she knew we were behind her 100%.
That's Mary's mother. Look in her eyes and you see all the warm, affectionate pride and loyalty that stood behind Mary in her plans for an education and in her work with livestock. Mary kept on raising calves 4 each year, and when she was 12, Mary began exhibiting beef at the Northwest Junior Livestock Show. Ask her dad how he felt sitting on the sidelines watching Mary win the championship ribbon at the show last year.
Well, I think without a doubt it was the happiest day in my life. I was very excited and thrilled. I just don't know how to express myself when it comes to that. You work, help these boys and girls work all these years, and when finally your own daughter gets to the top, why, of course, it makes you very happy.
And besides winning the championship award, Mary earned a tidy sum of cash. The calf was sold at auction there at the livestock show.
Mary's calf was bought by Mr. Cashman, the president of Doughboy Mills in New Richmond. Sold for $1.15 a pound, the highest price of any grand champion calf that was sold at our Eau Claire show. Mary uses it to educate herself. I want her to have a college education, and when she was in the high school in Eau Claire, why, Mary decided that that would be a good way for her to make some money and also get some knowledge of livestock. So she just started right in and done a good job.
The Guthrie family and their neighbors are a big part of life in the River Valley. Llewellyn Lee, Mary's cousin, 15 years old, had the grand champion sow at last year's 4-H fair. The Ray family down the road has some of the best purebred Holsteins in the state. The neighbors get together from house to house in a continual round of dinners. Sitting in the comfortable living room at the Guthrie's farmhouse, you ask Mrs. Guthrie if the farm folks join in at affairs in the city.
Yes, we do have quite a few interests in the city, and both enjoy our city friends as well as our country friends, and we feel that there should be a bond of friendship between these two. Well, we belong to a church in town, and we also help with the church out in our community.
Bob Guthrie's active in the Farm Bureau, and he's often out of town buying cattle in the West. But he's not too busy either to enjoy friends in town. He's a member of the Kiwanis Club in Eau Claire.
Well, each year, my wife and I invite the Kiwanis Club out here, the Ladies' Aid from the Chouax Church here, which is just 2 miles from here, serve the food, and we sometimes make it what's known as a ladies' night for Kiwanis. The Kiwanis Club pays the Ladies' Aid for the food. It gives them an opportunity to make a little money for the church, and it gets the Kiwanians away from the routine of going to the hotel for dinner each Thursday.
Yes, the farm folks are a big part of life in the River Valley. You remember a story you heard in town, happened long ago, about a little boy, 7 years old, a farm boy, came to town to visit his uncle. Those were the sawdust days, the days of traffic on the river. And the little farm boy could never forget three things about his visit. A Mississippi steamboat docking at the riverfront, the streetcars downtown, and a big Eau Claire policeman. Well, the sawdust days are gone. There's a schedule of airplanes landing instead of a steamboat, city buses instead of streetcars, and the little boy grew up to outrank the biggest policeman on the force. He's Herman White, president of the Eau Claire City Council and bulwark of town affairs. He took over the little shop his uncle started in the basement of his home, a shop which grew from manufacturing sawmill tools to become the White Machine Works, giant maker of piston rings and cylinder liners. Herman White knows this town. He helped to build it. Ask him about its growth.
Well, I think it's rather marvelous that a city like this could change from a lumbering town to the highly industrial community that it is. And then I believe the thing that makes this community successful industrially is that amount of diversification. Outside of the rubber company, we have the National Pressure Cooker Company, or large processors of aluminum and manufacturers of kitchenware. The Northwestern Motor Company makes railway motor cars. Then in another line that often follows lumbering, the paper mill, which is not the largest in the state, but has a reputation for making some high quality papers, such as fruit wrappers and so on, because of the pure water to be found here. We have several food processors, the Drum and Packing Company, the Swan Sausage Company among them. We also have a smaller one that has almost a countrywide reputation, the Silver Springs Farm, which produces I don't know how many tons of horseradish a year. You can travel across the country from New York to San Francisco and ask for horseradish in the hotel or restaurant, and the chances are the bottle will say Silver Springs Farm, Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Well, good zippy horseradish hits the spot, and so does baseball in any man's town. Besides heading up the Eau Claire City Council, Herman White is president of the Northern Baseball League, also an advisor on minor league affairs to Happy Chandler. Eau Claire's got a first-rate ballpark, rigged with new light towers this spring, and the Eau Claire Bears won the pennant last year. They hope to repeat this season. Yes, everybody in town's a baseball fan. That is, when they're not out fishing. Remember that string of names, the diversified industries Mr. White just listed? Take the National Pressure Cooker Company. Food's not all that's cooking there. The plant's turning out a new kind of outboard motor, one with a special poppet valve. Get Phil Brightman of the company to tell you about it.
The poppet valve development has permitted very attractively low trolling speed, which any fisherman loves. It also permits rapid, smooth acceleration and high speeds. And it's a rare fisherman who doesn't love to both troll at a very slow crawl and at the same time have the possibility of zooming up to pretty thrilling speeds.
Yes, the time has come in Eau Claire town to talk of many things, of muskies, trout, and northern pike the fishing season brings. Last week, the 14-year-old boy at Art Peterson's house was busy tying flies. And his dad knows that pretty soon the only time you'll see your neighbors is when they wave from the boat going by your summer cottage.
Directly, everyone or somebody's brother or sister or uncle owns a cottage in one of the surrounding rivers or lakes. And just about now, if I were to go down the street and look for a certain fellow or call his home, his wife would probably say, if she was still home, that he's out the river, he's out the lake, or he's out the cottage, getting it all cleaned up so we can move out next month. And it doesn't matter whether he's working at pressure cooker, U.S. rubber, or a clerk in a small downtown store, or if he's just a butcher at a local meat market. They all seem to have their cottages, or they have part ownership in one, so that a good share of the summer, when they're not on the job, they're out at a cottage.
You ought to know Art Peterson as president of the Chamber of Commerce, a small businessman, runs the furniture store down on Barstow Street. Yes, it's the main drag, Barstow Street. You stand on the river bridge at Barstow Street, you can look right into the heart of town. You've come a long way, traveler. You've looked past the street signs and billboards, looked into the factories and shops of this town, looked into the homes and the hearts of its people. You remember Ole, the man who came back from the woods. You remember the boys, the GIs back from the war. Remember the children singing and the athletes at the Y. There's a train leaving now from the station down the way. But you're not leaving. You know the funny thing? Best part of going away is coming back home. Well, this is your home. You feel like the Guthries. Bob and Mrs. Guthrie across the river on the farm.
We like to go to see the bright lights. It isn't the big cities, but we're always glad to get back to the farm.
I like to go and visit there, but I wouldn't like to stay. I was very happy to get home after I was gone for a couple of weeks.
What to say, yeah.
Yes, I like it in Eau Claire. In fact, I wouldn't trade places with Truman.
The story of Eau Claire, Wisconsin. This has been the fifth in a series of documentary programs about the people and places of Wisconsin, presented by the State Radio Council. Your narrator-producer was Ray Stanley. Technical assistance by Ben Russey and Myron Curry. Music by Patricia Hazard. Script by J. Helen Stanley, with magnetic recordings made on the spot in the city of Eau Claire. Join us in 2 weeks for a profile of Vilas County, Wisconsin's playground.